The years that you would have worked initially with Dr. Cusack and the Mills was when? What time span?
I'd say 58 until its demise now, and I don't know when its demise, because when its demise was there, an American company took over FMI, and then I went to work for them as project management contractor as well, you know.
Now, for a long time, you were missing because you were off with the Irish Army overseas.
Yes, overseas, yes. But it was still serving in the Army, you know. The Army was very, it was a very slack operation. You got your project and your job and you did your duty and everything else. But you had so much free time, you know. I was an officer in the Mediterranean. And
it'd be nice just...
There's a lot of people did well out of the Army. They did law and accountancy. And that was all encouraged. The fact, I was sent for by the Provost Marshal. And there's a magazine that's produced called Ilse Figuel. And my name appeared in it, and I was director of these companies. And what my income was and everything else and all that sort of thing, you know. And he come to me and he said to me, what are you at now? And I said, I'm doing this project engineering of the paper mills and everything. So I'd come home and finish work, army work at about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and go off and do the paper mills. But my brothers were working with me. It was, this thing was unreal. When I came back from overseas service, they promoted me to captain. And to get me an office and a telephone.
So, in around the end of the 60s, then you joined the army, and you took on this post. Just describe to me, what was it like working? Were you based in the Curra or?
The fire chief in the Curra. And the Curra consisted of a long wheelbase Land Rover with ladders on it and steer pumps and buckets of sand. And the Kildare County Council was run by voluntary firefighters. In other words, a butcher would be there and the siren would go off and take off his apron and go. But before the Curra Fire Brigade, they were the first scheme of defence. They went out to fight the fires. Now, you have to remember, Newbridge was becoming an industrial town at this stage. Newbridge ropes, Newbridge cutlery and everything else like that. But anyway, I got that tidied up anyway. I got them a good fire engine and everything else. Now. And I took on the county manager to get all the hydrants markers on the wall and get all the hydrants marked out and everything else, you know. And every time I met him, I was in the golf course. I don't want to be sued. But anyway,
was it a very relaxed service there?
I never took it serious.
Really?
No, I didn't.
But did anybody take it serious there at the time? I mean, was it a relaxed?
People went overseas now and took it serious. But overseas now was. That would be 724. I mean, when I went overseas, I went into a war zone, and you look after the community. You Turks and Greeks back kicking the head out of one another, you know what I mean? I don't understand. They set up schools and everything else.
The place that the Irish Army played abroad, was it significant?
Oh, yeah, big time, yeah. Oh, really big time, yeah. And great respect.
Tell me why. I mean, can you give me an example?
Well, I suppose they work with the community, and that you know what I mean. They demand the ceasefire line, and they work with the community, try and get the water going, get the electricity going and get the communications going. And it wasn't army thing, it was community as well, and schools and things like that, you know. I mean, they used to teach the Arabs or the Turks Irish, you know.
But were you did you apply your own skills to the charts with the engineering?
I had great support by the British. The British had bases out there. They're called sovereign bases. And if I want a bulldozer, I just put a bulldozer. If I want to go anywhere, I get a helicopter, you know.
The British were very much working with the Irish Army there, were they?
Well, in Cyprus, the United Nations, does Irish, Finns, Norwegians, Danes, and Brits. That would be the UN. Australians run the police. But the Brits, I'll call them Brits or the British, they had what's called sovereign bases. They still have them there now at the moment, Akrotiri and places like that. And they were very supportive to the UN, you know what I mean? Mm. Now, it was a backdoor type of operation, you know what I mean? You wouldn't get a British soldier driving a bulldozer, but he'd give you the bulldozer and you'd get your own guy to drive it. That was you'd be expected to go to weddings and everything else and pin the money onto...
You became very involved with them.
Oh yeah. You had to work with the community as well, yeah.
You were in the Congo as well, weren't you?
Never.
Did you not go to the Congo?
I was going to go to Congo, but Congo ended and then Cyprus started, you know.
And all the time, did you have brothers who were looking after the company at home?
Yeah.
And they kept it going?
They were single men and one brother, and another brother who's an electrician, and he was highly trained in high tension work, and that's the paper mills he used to do all the transformers and the electrical work on the job.
So
you remember we had about 150 people working for us at that time. You know, we had an accountant, two secretaries, and we were based up in Newcastle. The place is still up in Newcastle.
I see.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, you rose to the rank of captain in the army.
That was my contract. That was my conditions of employment.
And did you find that... how did you divide your time then between army work and business?
Well, I was a young man. And I was interested.